Shalom everyone, and Parashat Balak that we read this week, we can find it in the book of Numbers, chapter 25, verse 4, is talking about healing, like the Parashot starting last week, Chukat, next week, Pinchas. Those Parashot that fall usually during the month of Tammuz, the sign of Cancer, and we know that God always sends the remedy before the plague hits. And therefore, since we have a very sensitive period of the year, we know that the month of Cancer is emotionally unstable, yet it has that idea, even just the name, Cancer, with going together with a horrible disease with the same name. We need healing, and we have the concepts of healing. So last week, Parashat Chukat was talking about it. Healing, we discussed the idea that you can find it along the Zohar of Parashat Chukat, that healing must be achieved from below, and that means that you have to ask, you have to pray for it, you have to want it. Healing or richness or soulmates, nothing falls from heaven. Real, the great things you have to create on your own, then it will fall from heaven. Now, Parashat Balak, we have another reinforcement of the same idea, but from a totally different place. However, although the story of Parashat Balak, if you make a movie out of it, it looks like another book from the trilogy of The Lord of the Rings. Witchcraft, wizards, armies, enemies, a lot of like prophecies. You have all what it takes for a good fantasy book or a movie. However, the question is, how does that fit into our idea of how do we find the answer for healing in Parashat Balak? So, to make the story short, we just read on Parashat Chukat how the Israelites make a very abrupt change of direction after 40 years going around the Sinai desert. Now they facing the promised land. They even during Parashat Chukat we read about the Israelites making their way on the eastern part of Jordan, the river Jordan, just behind the settled land, through the desert, they just going up north, and then they turning west to the land of the Amorites. They fight the Amorites. They didn't want to fight them, but the Amorites basically declare war on them. So the Israelites have no choice but to fight back. And they win, which means the Israelites take over. We spoke about it last week. All the part that is east of the River Jordan, north of the Dead Sea, all the way up almost to till Damascus, which is the eastern part of the Jordan. Now, they're settling or waiting right now till Moses is finishing his term as a leader on just in front of Jericho on the east side of the Jordan River. However, who is on their south? Moab, the nation of Moab, and their king is Balak. Balak is a great sorcerer, and then the parasha starts with the words, that's the book of Numbers 22, verse 2. Vayar Balak ben Tzippor et kol asher asa Yisrael ha'Emori. And Balak, the son of Tzippor, who was the king of Moab, saw whatever Israel did to the Amorites. How could he see all what Israel did to the Amorites? He was in Moab. Yes, Moab is close to that region, How could he see all of it for Moab? Vayagar Moab mipnei ha'am, and Moab was very much afraid of the people of Israel. Vayakotzma mipnei bnei Yisrael, it's like we have, like they're very upset because they are sure that they are next, which means after the Israelites took over the Amorites, south of the Amorite kingdoms is the kingdom of Moab. They were very much, naturally, very much afraid. But the Zohar has another version to what does it mean to our question, how did Balak see everything? And the answer is, we can find it in the Zohar, this parasha, Rabbi Shimon Amar Vayar, Mai Reya Chama, what kind of sight, what kind of a vision did Balak see? Reya Vadai Mamash Chama, B'mashkofa D'chokhmata, he really saw the bigger picture, B'mashkofa D'chokhmata, through what is called the vision of Chokhmah, wisdom. We're talking about wisdom as a level of revelation, clairvoyance, and especially prophecy. V'chama be'enoi, v'chama b'mashkofa d'chokhmata, kema dichti v'yashkefa v'melech melech b'ishti v'ad achalon, mai v'ad achalon. And the Zohar is bringing few cases in the Tanakh, in which, in the books of the Bible, that in which it is mentioned that somebody saw, and we from the story, we realize it was not seeing with his own eyes, but seeing what is called, the Zohar is, or is calling it, Chalonot HaChokhmah, the windows of wisdom, which means people who reach high level of clairvoyance, they are capable of entering these windows of wisdom, which means they have kind of access ports to a higher level of sight, of vision, the ability to see beyond time and space, which are different levels of clairvoyance and prophecy. However, all of those people that we're talking about, like Balak in this case, Avimelech, the king of the Philistines, in the book of Genesis, or in the book of Judges, the mother of Sisera, that she looked through the window. All of these are windows, the Zohar is saying, windows that are different levels through which people are capable to have access to what we call, again, different levels of prophecy. Now, what's the catch over here? That these windows, the Zohar is saying, when you are accessing that window using witchcraft, idol worshiping, or in a greater name, the network of the dark net, what is called the impure system, or the dark net in the metaphysical level, when you do, when you access that, and you know what? Even when you access the light network, the tree of life network, as a human being, you will always be limited. There's almost no way that a human being with a human brain and capacity has the ability to see the whole picture. Okay, remember that. Because why? Balak, he really saw, the Zohar is describing us later, he saw how the Israelites won the war against the Amorites using high level of metaphysical powers. Okay, so, and the Zohar is giving a description. I won't go into it. He was using, the Zohar said, he was named Balak ben Tzipor, not because his father was called Tzipor. Tzipor means a bird. He was called Balak ben Tzipor because his witchcraft was called the witchcraft of the bird. And the Zohar goes into details how you make, from the reading the Zohar, you cannot make it. You can't make a witchcraft like this. Don't even try. But the Zohar has kind of a nice description that gives us the idea that we are talking not about a bird, but reaching into certain, we call it today, codes to activate in the dark network. And using that, you could see stuff that regular human beings cannot see. And of course, you have to work really hard about it. You have to work very hard about yourself. You have to reach a level of clairvoyance that the Zohar says is possible, even in the dark side. Now, what happened was that when Balak was making one day his sorceries, his witchcraft, and he was going to the other side, to the side beyond the physical senses, he fell into, or he somehow engaged into the warfare between the Amorites and Moses. And the warfare was mostly on the metaphysical level. And he saw how Moses defeated the Amorites and finished them off just using his powers. Now, Rashi hints about it. Rashi was the greatest commentator ever of the whole Tanakh, France, 11th century. And Rashi says it very clearly. Why did Balak approach the Midianite? That's verse 20, Numbers 22, verse 4. Vayomer Moav el Zikne Midian. And Moav is having a convention with the elders of Midian, another enemy nation of Israel. And Rashi is saying, he's bringing a midrash, he never got it by himself, but he's saying, why did Midian and Moab join together to fight the war? Ela mi'iratan shel Yisrael asu shalom b'nehem. Usually, Midian and Moab were not such a good friends. They were enemies. But because they got scared of the Moses and Israel, they made an alliance. Let us fight together. And what does it mean? It says really clearly, Rashi is giving us that explanation. Because they saw that the victory of the nation of Israel, the victory is not normal. It's a miraculous victory. It's beyond normal. This you could see. It's beyond just people fighting. You could see there was some power. So they said, since the leaders of these, Moses, he was raised in Midian. Moses ran away from Egypt, and at the end of his journey, he came to Midian, and his power with is in his mouth, okay? Prayers and so on. Let us bring somebody who has the same level and is also has the power of cursing. And therefore, they turned to Balaam to come and curse the Israelites and eliminate them. So they turned to Balaam, and Balaam was also part of what we call the Levant, this area of the Middle East. He was known as the greatest wizard of the darknet in that time. He was kind of a cousin because he was a cousin, a grandson of Laban, the father of Rachel and Leah. And he got the sorcery and the powers of witchcraft of his grandfather, Lavan. Now, and he had some an agenda. Oh, here we have an opportunity to get even. When Jacob, Rachel, and Leah leave Lavan, it was not on good terms. So whoever knows the story, you can read it in the book of Genesis. But we're not into storytelling here. What is the message over here? So there are a few layers of message. The first layer, if Balak was such a great clairvoyant and a wizard, and if he saw the whole picture, he would have known that Moses and the Israelites had this very direct, precise order not to touch Moab till King David. They had 500 years, almost less than 500 years, till the Israelites were allowed to touch them. If they just knew the big picture, if Balak really saw the picture, he would not even bring his nation to that foolish situation in which they hire Balaam to curse the Israelites, and not just that he's not cursing, he's also blessing them. Later on, he comes up with that idea to send the princes of Moab and Midian to seduce the Israelites, and then they were punished because the Israelites went to war to take a revenge. So here we have another story that is, on one hand, oh, you could be very, very, very wise. You could be so much wiser, a clairvoyant, even a prophet, to see what nobody else can see. On the other hand, you still see a very small part of the picture. Why is that important? Remember, as we read that, how Balak and Bilam are trying to create that situation in which Bilam is cursing the nation and, with his curses, destroying the nation of Israel. Where is Moab? Where is Midian? Where is Balaam? And where is Israel? Okay. Oh, yes, the Jews, the Israelites, they went through a lot of troubles, but they're back and they're here and they're still winning. In a way, as Rashi is saying, 1,000 years ago in France, they're winning. If you look at the history of the last few months, they're winning in a way that is not normal. You could see the hand of God is there. So you want to fight them, you can't fight them with regular weapon warfare. You need to use something much higher. You need to use magic because the victories of the Israelites then and today, it's using magic. What is the magic over here? So we can still continue and see how the foolishness of Balak, that he did his best, but he didn't see the whole picture, and therefore he like made so many mistakes. Balaam, the same story. We read the story of Balaam in that he's telling the messengers, the messengers of Balak that come to him and say, come join us, the Midianites and the Moabites, and let's curse them together. And he says, I have to ask God. I'm not doing anything without asking God. He's a great, great follower of God, right? And what God is telling Balaam, very clearly, the message is very clear in this time. Okay, we can find that in the book of Numbers, chapter 22, verse 12. You should read it carefully. And it says as follows: Vayomer Elohim el Bilam, and God says to Bilam, Lo telech imahem, do not go with them. Lo taor et ha'am. If you're going to say that, so okay, I won't go with them, I can curse them from here. Do not curse the people. Ki baruchu. And if you're going to say, so let me bless them, we don't need your blessings, they're already blessed. That is the precise message of God. Vayakom Bilam baboker, so Balaam wakes up in the morning and he tells to the ministers of Balak, go to your land, God does not let you let me go. Balak says, you know, there's no one you cannot buy. So let's bribe him. He wants more money. Okay, you already have a suspicion over here. Somebody who have a direct relation with God and he want to buy him. So he's telling him with a new mission, I'm going to give you so much honor and money and gold. So Balaam is saying, I'm going to ask again. You ask God again. You know how many times we know exactly what is the answer, and we ask anyway. What's God's answer? Okay. Then again, go with him. That's what you want. Go with him. We know that in the end, Balaam was, he never came back home. He was killed. He never came back home. If you just listened the first time, the whole story would be different. However, we would miss something so great because every time Balaam tried to curse the Israelites, amazing blessings came out that were using them in the liturgy, in songs, in poetry, in Hebrew language. It's like there's so many idioms in Hebrew coming from these prophecies. And the Zohar is asking, why do we need the words of Balaam? Why can't we use the words of God? Why do we have to have in the Torah? Isn't the Torah the word of God? How come we have the words of Balaam? And why do we use the words of Balaam for our prayer book, for the Siddur, for the Hebrew prayer book? Yes, the amazing words. And here comes a very important idea. There's a kind of a tradition to say, you know, there's certain things we need to remember every day. One of the most important of them, it's a verse from the book of Micah. Micah, I think in English, Micah in Hebrew. And the book of Micah, chapter 6, verse 5. This chapter is being read as Haftarah on Shabbat of Parashat Balak. And the verse says as follows, Ami, Zechorna, Mayatz Balak Melech Moav. My nation, remember, that's why it's a mitzvah, to remember that story of Balak. So when we're learning it, we're performing one of the 613 mitzvot to remember the story of Balak. For what purpose? So, Zechorna Mayatz Balak, remember what Balak advised and what Bilam, Umeana to Bilam ben Beor, and what did with Bilam, the son of Beor, answer? Min HaShittim Ad HaGilgal, that was the place, the Shittim, that Shittim was also the name of that horrible sin of the Israelites. With the advice of Bilam, but the end of the verse is the most important thing. That's a mitzvah. Leman da'at tzidkot Adonai. So you would know the great charity of God. What does it mean? And the answer is that here, Barak, the Midianites, Balaam, with all their witchcraft, with all their plans of warfare, metaphysical warfare, physical warfare, and so on and so forth, all of that, they get together with one purpose, genocide of the Israelite nation. Okay? Genocide of the Israelite nation. You know, this is not, they were not the only ones. You know, the most ancient, the first mentioning of the nation of Israel in any record that is not within a Jewish tradition, which means the Torah, whatever, is in Mer Neftach's memorial that he is the king of Egypt, Pharaoh of Egypt, one of them, that he has this memorial that was found in Egypt, and he mentions his victories. And one of them, he mentions that he invaded Israel, eliminated Israel. There's no more Israel. I eliminated the nation of Israel from the face of the earth. Where is Mer Neftach and where is the nation of Israel? Israel is still here forever, and Be'er Neftach is just a memory. His nation is just an old memory from museums and archaeology, nothing relevant for today. Okay, so the question is like this. The Israelites do not have any idea that all of this is happening. They don't know about the plan of Balaam. Of course, Balak and the Midianites have no idea. Balaam is trying to curse three times, and whatever comes is just a blessing. And the question is, what did the Israelites do about it? Nothing. Nothing. They had no idea. So what did they do? How did they protect themselves from witchcraft, evil eye, whatever, evil bed mouthing? How did they? They simply did what they're supposed to do. So simple. Therefore, when we want to find protection from evil eye, from witchcraft, from all kinds of enemies, doesn't mean that we have to be like, you know, I don't want to know, but you do your best and remember that God will do the rest. What is it you do your best? The Israelites didn't know anything about it. So they didn't know anything. So what did they do? They did exactly what Moses taught them. They operated the tabernacle, the Mishkan, the offerings, the prayers. They simply followed what should be followed in order to connect to the tree of life. And the moment you are connected properly to the tree of life, you are protected. That's one idea. Another idea, which is even more powerful, that we have to remember. Leman da'at tzidkot Hashem. The question is again, why are the words of Balaam written in the Torah? And the answer is, and as the Zohar is saying, whatever is written in the Torah is pure words of God. Okay? Pure message of God. Yes, it is mentioned that this is Balaam who put the words in Balaam's mouth. Only God. And you know what? Even more than that. There's a very sad story about the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, one of the greatest Kabbalists ever. He was born and raised in Padua, northern Italy. When he was a kid, you know, like just after his bar mitzvah, I already knew by heart the whole Tanakh, the Mishnah, the Talmud, the Zohar, the writings of the Arizal. When he was in his early 20s, he was already in such a high level, he was communicating with angels. He would get like great ideas and also prophecies in a way from great angels. And when the rabbis of Italy and Germany heard about his communication with the upper world, they got terrified. And they invited him, the Council of the Rabbis of Italy, invited him, and they forced him to take all his precious writings that he got from really high places, locked them in a box, and later on, some of them they burned and some of them they buried. And then he went to Frankfurt in Germany, and the rabbis over there, the Jewish court, simply banned him from, forced him to sign, commit that he's not going to teach Kabbalah ever again. Okay? What was the reaction of the Ramchal? His reaction that even those people who simply did not understand how holy he was and how high his teachings were, they were messengers of God because they could not say or do anything unless God permitted it. And he was not going to fight them, he was not going to argue with them, and he simply followed their instruction, and he did not teach Kabbalah since that moment. He moved later on to Amsterdam. Over there, this is the Sephardic the Portuguese, Spanish Portuguese community took him in, hired him as a rabbi, as a teacher. He did not teach Kabbalah. Why? If that means that I have to fight with people and argue, I don't want to do that. That's not godly. It's not godly. So what did he do? He taught Kabbalah without using Kabbalistic terms. What was the result? The greatest gift that he ever gave to the world, the books that Mesilat Yesharim, the Path of the Just, the Derech Hashem, the Way of God, some of the most powerful books of faith that you can ever have in Jewish books. Why? Just remembering what he said. If God allowed them to do that, that's God doing. And therefore, I accept whatever is happening as the word of God, and I am accepting it with humility, with faith, and with a simple trust that everything is for the good. So Balaam and Balak lacked that faith. They were motivated by fear, by greed, by honor, by all kinds of very low incentives, agenda. So on one hand, they were great people with great knowledge and great connection. On the other hand, we look at that reading of Parashat Balak, and we see step by step how they made mistakes that a small child won't make mistake like this. Okay? Why? To show us when we allow hatred, and that was pure hatred against the Israelites, when we allow hatred, that will bring us shame and all kinds of, and a loss and so many other losses. At the end, Bilam lost his life. So look around and see the most powerful, successful, rich, famous people. But if you, when you see that they allow the hatred to come in, when they allow that agenda, and it's not just them, it's a warning for each one of us. The moment we allow that in, if we want to know the answer, why does it happen to me? Like, and we're talking about this is the month of cancer. Why? Diseases, why it happens to me? It always goes back to pure faith. Achieving pure faith is achieving the highest levels of protections. Protections from people's attack from outside, on one hand, and the worst is the attack from within. That we know that from within, the biggest and the most dangerous diseases, we call them today autoimmune diseases. Cancer is an autoimmune disease. So many of those horrible diseases are autoimmune. They are coming from within, and they're all coming from one source: lack of faith. Lack of faith brings to anxiety, fear, hatred, remorse, guilt, blame, shame, all of that stuff. It's coming when you don't understand, as we said, Balak and Bilam, the whole story was for one purpose, so we know how much God loves us. This is the name of the, that's us all, the whole story. When we see disaster, when we see terrible stuff happening, we have to say to ourselves that we know one thing. If that happens, it happens because God allowed it. And if God allowed it, it's because there's a good reason. So we can reach a better place. We all go through a tikkun process. The tikkun process is to go through all kinds of what we call trials and tribulations. or what we can call it in Hebrew, nisyonot. Nisyonot means on one hand tests, but on the real meaning of it is miracles. What is a test? It's a test, which means a test is really bringing the person into a place of ascension. When a person achieves that place of ascension, then from a test, it becomes a miracle. Without a test, you will never perform the miracle. And why do we need miracles? Because we're human beings. We were created in God's image and we need to perform miracles on a daily basis. And the most simple miracle is when we transform our fears, anxieties that can turn into hatred and blame and shame and so on, and we transform them into trust and faith and connection. And in return, we will find ourselves doing the right thing at the right time, being in the right place without even knowing the whole set of calculations that we're supposed to know. We will be doing that anyway. So the Ramchal, he said, okay, they are after me. They hate me. They don't understand me. They don't really get it. I don't agree with theirs, but that's the way it came out. So it's God's will. And the major idea of the Ramchal's message of Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato was that the message of humanity is to transform the evil into good. Every moment, whatever we experience, transforming the evil into good. And we see how. When Balaam was trying to really commit a genocide, he had the power to do that. He was very, very powerful. He had the power. But without the Israelites knowing that, every time he tried to curse, only blessings came out of his mouth. He said by himself, I can say only what God puts in my mouth. But he knew the trick. How to get vengeance. Sometimes we need to go through vengeance in order to grow. Now, what can we do? We're human beings, and human beings, we learn usually through the tough moments in our lives. Either it kills us or it forces us to perform miracles. And when we perform miracles and we touch the divinity, we realize that everything we went through was basically orchestrated by God to bring us to these moments of pain and pressure and mix-up and confusion, that without it, there won't be a miracle. And who created a miracle? The person. We are miraculous creatures, all of us. What's the story? We do not create miracles unless we are under pressure. That's the story. And that brings us to the end of the parasha and the end of Parashat Balak. After Bilam is, and I recommend it, it's like reading again and again the words of Bilam. How he's blessing the Israelite nation, and we know it's God's blessing because we use them in our prayers. So, who puts the words in the person's mouth? Each one of us, when we speak, the question is, when God puts the words in our mouth, where is he sending those words from? Is he sending them from a higher place or from a lower place? Is he sending those words in our mouth so we get ourselves into trouble? And because of that trouble, it will force us to perform a miracle so we can escape the trouble. This is the question. How do we choose? Okay, so the Zohar is teaching us the secrets of healing. Let me just go into it.
Second. I hope I didn't lose it.
Okay, so I didn't mean to say that, but that's the Zohar of Perusha Sulam, the Zohar on Parshat Balak, verse 7, Ktiv, and he's quoting here from Psalms 68. Amar Adonai mi Bashan Ashiv Ashivim Tzulot Yam. God said, I will respond from the Bashan. The Bashan is a northern part of the Amorites. I will answer from the depths of the sea. כצל עובר, אבל בתשובה ותפילה מעשים טובים, דמעות רבות הוא קדוש. כי הרב העליון על כל העולם, מאיר אורו מצמצם קדושתו אל האדם עזוב רצונו. Translation. We have to put our heart. We have to focus our heart on that idea that is called faith. Emuna. Emunat הקדוש ברוך הוא, the faith in God. That God, all his words are truth and very great faith. And since God said anything, you have the 24 books of the Tanakh, Nasa kulo, the moment God said it, it was already happened. It already happened. It's beyond time and space. Vezeh adam, but humans, tsar halev, they are humans with a very squished heart. Very narrow, kind of small heart. They can't have faith. The only way to expand your heart, to make it comfortable and wide, is emunah, faith. But if you don't have that, your heart will be small and squished and narrow. Pressure, blood pressure. אם אמר שלכמה שנים ולכמה זמן יושלם, So the person is already asking question, how long would it take if God said and there are prophecies, I don't see it happening. That's the way it is. God, his reign, his kingdom, the whole, all the universes, and there are many of them, they're full of his glory. Of course that he's like this. The things, the words, the thinking, the perceptions of human beings are so small. And all the words of a person are so small and like they have a limit of time. You say something, who remembers you in 5 minutes? Even let's say 5 years. Every human being is like, how many of us do really remember our great great grandfather? What did he do? Where did he live? Who, what a kind of a person, you know, very few of us, you know, it's like, so, you know, in a generation or two, who would remember me? We're so temporary on this world. Aval b'tshuva utfila u'masim tovim u'dmaot rabot. But with returning to God, tshuva, reconnecting to God, wrongly translated as repentance, utfila, with prayer, ומעשים טובים and good deeds, ובדמעות רבות and with a lot of tears, a human being will become. Sorry about that. A human being will become holy. כי הרב העליון על כל העם, because the master above the whole world is shining his light. And he is constricting. It's like he's like what's the word? Condensing, minimizing His Holiness to the person according to what he can receive. So when it says that in the future to come, God is going to revenge against all the kings of the world that ever gave trouble to Israel. And people say, like, oh, I don't see that happening. You know, God, the moment he said it happened, the fact that I cannot see that doesn't mean it didn't happen. You know, for thousands of years, people read the prophecies of Isaiah and Jeremiah, even Moses in some of his prophecies. Where is that happening? Going to happen? The prophecy of Balaam. And here you can see the prophecies are being fulfilled in front of our eyes and in a very high rate and speed. So the moment people realize that on one hand, every human being can become a holy, miraculous creature. That's the calling of each one of us. We can perform miracles above space and time. We can heal. And that's the next article. That's in verse 16, 17, and 18. We don't have so much time. So it speaks about the judgments that a human being has to go through in this world. And it says, that's verse 17, Va'kadosh Baruch Hu tamid berachamim. And God is always with mercy. That's what the verse in Micha. Ve'rachamav al kol. And his mercies are for everyone. Ve'eino rotze ladun bnei adam lefi ma'aseihem, and he doesn't want to judge people according to their deeds, because then no human being will ever survive. Ki kach amar David, and that's why King David said, Im avonot tishmor ya, Psalms 130. God, if you will keep all the sins, who will be able to stand? Adonai mi yamod. Kan yesh leistakel, kevan shamayim avonot tishmor ya. If he said, if God, you're going to keep all the record of all the sins, why he added the word Adonai, which is the master of judgment? You know, just enough to say, Im avonot tishmor ya. Umeshiv, and the answer is, verse 18, there are three levels of rachamim, mercy, that King David is mentioning over here. Ya, Adonai, me. Three. Ya, Adonai, me. Im avonot tishmor ya, shem abba v'imay nikreim ya. If you're going to keep the sins, and then he mentions the name of God that is relating to the what is called Abba ve'ima. These are the worlds of the upper world that are always in harmony and connection and pure light. Which means, as Zohar says, Im avonot rabim kol kach, ad she'alu lemala el Abba ve'ima. In a case even that the sins are so many that they already creating harm, not in these worlds and the close ones, but in the upper worlds that are in total harmony, because human sins can really contaminate universes, not just this planet, universes upon universes. Even if that happens, then the name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, which is Rachamim, will be awakened in judgment. And when that awakens in judgment, all the levels, you know, We're talking about God's light is infinite. How do we receive the infinite of light of God without being burnt, without being like poof, erased into nothing? And the answer is the light is coming down to our dimension through many, many funnels. Like, the electricity coming from the power station to our home appliances through transformers. But when we arouse the judgment, we can block all those funnels, all of those emanations, all of those sefirot of light. And when they get blocked, we don't have sustenance, we don't have health, we don't have. Okay? But when all of these levels and sefirot and emanations are blocked, there's one level. That if, when we come back to that level and reconnect to that level, kol ha'refuot yotzat mimena, all healings come from that level. Then we will experience God's mercy, healing. Umiu, who is that level? It's called me. Me, mem yud. Me in Hebrew means who, okay? Which is Bina. Me is also a number, 50. 50 gates of purity, 50 gates of holiness, 50 gates of Bina. Me, Yamod Lanu. So who is going to stand for us? Who is going to heal us? Who is going to give us the power to perform the miracle of healing our soul and our body? This is, as we said, mi yirpalach. The healing is coming from Bina. Valken, imelu shnei shemot yu nistamim imeno, mi yamod, shekol adarchim shel tshuva ptuchim imeno. And mi is also the level, the 50th gate, is the gate of teshuva, of returning to holiness, returning to godliness. So, what basically this parasha is about? On one hand, we have that nature that we go after vanity, after hatred, after games of power, agendas, and stuff like this, and we're really becoming so blind, we don't see the writings on the wall. On the other hand, when we read the end of Parashat Balak, and this is when finally Bilam is saying that he cannot curse the Israelites because only blessings come out. So he says, I tell you something to Moab and Midian. The only way to destroy the Israelites is to destroy them from within. Get them disconnected from their holiness. The moment they fall from the holy network, they're yours. And that's what they're doing. Think about it, they're taking the princes of Midian and Bila and Moab, which means the girls of the leaders. Because the peasants were not so well, let's say, they were not that beautiful. Who were beautiful? The girls that grew up pampered with all the treatments and stuff like this. They looked good. They send them over the camp of the Israelites. And they send them over like with a blessing. Tell them, let us make war a love and not war. Let us worship all gods together. We are all in it together. Let's have peace in the Middle East. We're just loving each other unconditionally. They didn't mean that. Till today, it's the same story. They come in peace and they really mean war. That's what they wanted. They wanted to destroy the Israelites. They realized the only way to destroy them is to come with a message of peace. Let us worship the same all gods together. It's all the same. We are all humans, the children of God. We are all the same. When the Israelites started to follow them, the plague started and everything started to fall apart. And then the last scene, chapter 25, verse 6. V'nei ish mibnei Yisrael ba v'yakrev elecha v'tamidyanit leinei Moshe uleinei kol adat bnei Yisrael. And one of the greatest leaders of the Israelites, he was one of the biggest leaders of the tribe of Shimon. He takes the princess of Midian, Cozbi, his name was Zimri, and in front of the eyes of Moses and the congregation of Israel, while they are standing there, as it said, Vehema bochim petach ol moed, and all of them are crying at the next to the opening of the tabernacle. And Zimri is taking Cozbi, that leader is taking that princess, and he's saying, Moses, you also took a Midianite wife, Tzipora. Why can't I do that? What's wrong with it? Why are you saying that you have to kill everybody who's doing that? The previous verses. And he takes her into the tent to make love to her. And everybody's crying and thousands of people dying all over. Verse 7, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Vayako mitoch ha'eda vayikach chomach b'yado. And then it says, Vayar Pinchas, Pinchas saw. Nobody knew what to do. Pinchas. How does the parasha start? Vayar Balak, Balak saw. Now, Pinchas saw. What did he see? What did Pinchas see? Pinchas was the only one that really, instead of going hysterical, upset, and crying, he wanted to save the nation. And because of that, he's the only one who saw from his study with Moses. He saw exactly what needs to be done. He was the only one who saw them because he's the only one that instead of being hysterical and upset, cared. He saw what happened and he remembered the halakha. He came to Moses and said, Moses, you taught us that in such a case, the only way to stop it is by killing both. So immediately, although he was the grandson of Aaron the priest, he took a spear in his hand. He came after Zimri and Cozbi into the tent, and he speared them. And the plague stopped. So we have that healing in this parasha of stopping the plague. And today, there's so many plagues. Cancer is a plague, heart condition is a plague, depression is a plague. There's so many plagues because you see so many people fall into such terrible diseases that science is still not strong enough to heal. Okay, infections, science can, heal most of them. But these ones, it's not that easy. He stopped the plague. And again, like in Parashat Chukat, that we learned you have to pray from below. You have to ask from below. You have to awaken from below. You have to come up from below all the way up to 50 gates of holiness, so the miracle will happen. Pinchas did the same thing. He touched the 50th gate and the miracle happened. He stopped the plague. He was so enthusiastic to heal the nation. He knew that he will be killed by the followers of Zimri. They were from the tribe of Shimon. They were not easygoing people. He knew he's going to be killed by them. And he didn't care. He cared for the people. His devotion, his excitement, his faith. If that should happen, that should happen. That created touchdown. He achieved the miracle of connecting to that gate of healing, the 50th gate, the gate of healing. When somebody says the Arizal is getting sick, is because he lost the 50th gate, me, that we mentioned before. And because he lost the 50th gate, he fell to the 49th. And that's why the word in Hebrew for bed, when you say bedridden, is mita, memtet, hey, it's the malchut, fell, the vessel fell to the 49th gate. How do you heal somebody who fell to the 49th gate? So Rabbi Zachariah is saying, when you visit the sick and you give him your hand and you say, Yehav lei yadei, in Aramaic, give me your hand. Initials, that's a story from the beginning of tractate Brachot in the Talmud. Give me your hand, Yehav lei yadei, but meditate on the initials, Yehav lei yadei, Yud Lamed Yud. That is the second name of the 72 names. It is numerical value, Gematria 50. And by that, you can pull him up into the 50th gate and he will heal, getting closer to that. So we have here the secret of healing. It's all about faith. It's all about devotion. It's all about realizing the greatness of God and returning back to the 50th gate of holiness depends in us, on us. So health and healing for everybody. Thank you so much.